be alert. I think that's sort of.
Train's leaving the station and we're not on Amtrak.
You got a blue light.
Let's go. The agenda change either at the beginning or near the end.
Yes, let's do that first. If there's anybody here that needs to.
It's going to be.
Hi there.
Welcome.
See what his or her intention is.
So aggregate is.
Caddy.
Let's go.
How are you?
I am ready to go home and drink until my brain light.
I'm ready to drink until my brain is up.
Good evening, everyone. We seem to have a bit of a rowdy crowd this evening. It sounds like we'll have some fun here tonight. Welcome to our Joint Committee on Transportation this fine February 12th, 2018.
Lincoln's birthday.
Thank you, Senator, for acknowledging that. We have three items on our agenda tonight, but should we do the agenda update first so people are aware of what's going on, Mr. Brennan?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So Wednesday's agenda, as it's issued today, says that the topics under House Bill 4060 will be vehicle privilege tax and EV rebates. Because of a member availability issue, we're going to move that portion, the EV rebates and the privilege tax discussion, to Monday, the 19th, a week from tonight. So filling in on Wednesday, then, we will discuss instead some ancillary issues that are also in House Bill 4060. Those are going to be the outdoor advertising sign program, the Pacific Wonderland registration plate will also be discussed in there. This will all be going on an agenda, and I believe a proposal on aggregate as well. So I don't have a lot of details on that, but those are going to be made by an agenda modification tomorrow. We'll put out that agenda for the Monday discussion of the privilege tax, and I believe that is what we're going to discuss on Wednesday this week, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair. Senator Johnson.
If the staff doesn't know what the proposal is on Monday, and we're expected to be conversant on it on Wednesday, what about aggregate are we going to discuss?
Madam Chair, Senator, I think what it is, what we're saying is that that will be a topic upon which we will get a briefing from advocates for an amendment, which is in the development right now. So they'll be presenting.
And those would be ODOT advocates, or those would be out? Because I know ODOT has a proposal in your, I'm now calling it the ominous report.
So, Madam Chair, Senator, I believe that will be one of the topics, is that deletion of that stiff criteria for aggregate, but that is not, will not be the only proposal that's up on Wednesday.
Okay, I guess that then invites my next question. When what's the air traffic control on the rolling proposals? It seems to me that if I had an interest in aggregate and I heard some amorphous concept that was going to be discussed on Wednesday, I would be quite curious as to know what and where's it coming from, and is it going to be considered in the policy bill? I'm just curious what the process is going to be and what the co-chairs and chairs' tolerance for policy amendments is.
Go ahead.
I think the ones that are the ones that are in. I suppose someone could try to suggest something else, but our end date now, our target end date is to have a final composite amendment, I think it's the 26th. For the committee to vote on based on the consensus that we've had along the way. So if you have got one, an idea that you wanted in, you're a little late. But I remind everybody that we're only, 7 months away from the next session.
For joy. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any other comments? Then I believe, Mr. Brennan, I need to open a hearing.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4060. We have three items on our agenda tonight. Connect Oregon Section 1819, which has to do with bike and pedestrian issues in state parks. We have a conversation about the Statewide Transportation Improvement Fund, Sections 20 to 24, which now has a new name, I would like you to note. And third, we need to have a bit of a conversation with the Department of Revenue about definitions around the bicycle excise tax. So I will go ahead and start with sections 18 and, I'm sorry. Okay. Again, Connect Oregon sections 18 and 19, and we have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So let's do two panels. Aaron Dees, Annalise Kohler, and Dale Penn, please.
They are not talking about Connect Oregon, Madam Chair. They're going to come talk about the other topics.
And they're not here?
Let me back up.
They're all rushing.
So rather than doing it by topic, Madam Chair, I would just suggest calling up the people who signed up to speak and having them address whichever one of those topics.
Yeah. All right. We're going to open this up to all three topics. Call people up and let us know which of the three items on the agenda you would like to speak to. How does that work? All right. Aaron Dees, Annalise Kohler, and Dale Penn, please.
And afterwards, we'll fill in whatever.
It does.
Can you guess which one we want?
I can. And what a delight it is to have you here. And please.
Thank you. Good evening, chairs, vice chairs. My name is Aaron Dees. I'm with TriMet, speaking to the transit section, section 20 and through 24. Specifically, I'd like to speak to one issue that's already in this bill, and then to hit what Senator Beyer said, being too late on raising up another issue that I've spoken to a few of you
and
about.
I will interject another issue that's come up around this too, so please begin.
Yes, I assume so. I'm testifying in support of Section 20 of House Bill 4060, which is the So let's back up. As part of House Bill 2017 from last session, TriMet made a commitment to implement a low-income fare program, and in order to help offset, partly offset the impact on low-income folks for the employee-side payroll tax. We are prepared to move forward with this program. We've been planning to do it for a couple years. But in developing the rules, we realized that the prohibition for spending stiff money on light rail, the generic term light rail, meant that we were unable to implement a low-income fare because there was a Attorney General's letter stating that we would be prohibited from doing that. So Section 20 resolves that by clarifying it for light rail capital expenses. I think the initial intent was to not have this money be spent on things like Southwest Corridor, Columbia River Crossing, and other things like that. So we're testifying in support of that section. On a separate issue, similar topic, in putting together the plan to roll out our low-income fare by when the employee tax hits, which is July of 2018, we realized that, just recently realized, that the STIF doesn't actually, implemented until January of 2019. So if we were to roll out the plan was to roll it out in 2018 by July, and then in hopes, well, you would put it in our, we would put in our plan, we would submit it to OTC. If OTC approved it, MoDOT was going to work on some rules to allow us to then get reimbursed for the start of the program. The importance of this is that we really wanted to have something out the gates that when people started seeing these impacts on their tax bills, we would be able to point to something and say, we've rolled out this plan immediately. We've been preparing for it for a couple years. I've spoken with a number of you, and I've spoken with ODOT regarding, is there a difficulty in rolling that implementation date back to July of 18? Haven't been able to think of a good reason why we wouldn't do that or couldn't do that. So that would be my request. I also wanted to, again, thank you for House Bill 2017, local folks are very excited about it, and we really appreciate it. So I'm happy to take any questions.
Hey. Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. when we were talking about that in the work groups, we were, and frankly, our focus is on we couldn't spend the money until we'd collected the money, and there would be a lag there. But we hadn't thought about the fact of, you know, if you wanted to take a risk and be reimbursed for that. Actually, there's some sense to that. One of the concerns we had as we talked about it is people are starting, will start paying the payroll tax, but won't see anything for a while. So that really does address that.
And Chair Beyer, it is a common practice with FTA on federal projects when you are working to put together a grant agreement to that you enter into with a letter of no prejudice, basically saying expenses for this project, if you actually make it to the end of the process and we approve it, we will reimburse them. Now, if you don't, you're out of luck. And I think that's a similar process we would like to set up with ODOT here, is if we end up getting all the way to the process and all the different groups get to check in, say yes, and OTC says, yep, yes, then we can get reimbursed for implementing this immediately.
Any other comments, questions? Sounds like early adoption to me. Yeah, nicely done.
Question left.
Senator Johnson.
My only question, and I just asked this sort of globally, is are there cash flow problems? I don't know the magnitude of what we're talking about, and if suddenly you need a large reimbursement, have you worked out the details with ODOT so that there isn't a...
We're working on that. I think the initial rollout will be a ramp, and I think that we expect the gap would be... again, don't quote me on this, except that I'm on the record.
I think you might be, sir.
Good luck with that.
So we think it could be within the $2 to $3 million range, which TriMet would cover. And I think then we expect that we'll definitely have more than that coming from the STIF in the first tranche. Now, it may not be a vastly more than that, but... As we were based on estimates. And again, the risk would be something that we would work out with ODOT, and then we would, the TriMet would be taking on.
Okay, well, it's a worked out with ODOT piece that I just don't want you to present a bill for $3 million and expect to get paid on Thursday.
I don't.
That's really where I was going. And what you're really asking for is authorization language for ODOT, and it's still up to ODOT to decide whether they want to do this or not and under what conditions.
And allow us to take the risk. Yes, the risk is all on us. So if we think we won't do it unless we're confident enough that we're going to get reimbursed for it. A couple million dollars is a lot of money.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about TriMet. They're a big agency with some reserves, and I'm sure they would be able to cover the float. I am concerned because this is a statewide program, and how would it affect Lane County Transit? How would it affect Salem? How would it affect other smaller transit agencies around the state?
Senator Monroe, I think that this is a voluntary program, and if they feel they have the capacity to be able to take this risk, they could choose to do it. If they look at it, I would anticipate that most will probably look at it and say, no, thank you. But I'm just speaking for...
So it's permissive.
Permissive, entirely okay. Permissive.
That's good.
Anyone else? Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Chair McEwen and Chair Beyer. My name is Annalisa Curler, and I am the current chair of TIAC, which is TriMet's Transit Equity Advisory Committee. Our goal is to provide insight and guidance to TriMet's general manager on issues of equity, access, and inclusion. I'm clearly here to talk about the transit piece, and just want to echo a lot of what Aaron said. A low-income fare has been a huge priority of TIAC's for a number of years. About a year and a half ago, we sat on a tri-county committee composed of advocates and local government to draft a low-income fare program and what that might look like. And we were very excited when we saw House Bill 2017 and its inclusion of transit funding. And the intention and our understanding of the intention was definitely for this funding to be used for a low-income fare program. And we were very surprised to hear that there was a little bit of a mismatch in the bill language. So would definitely testify in support of Section 20 of that bill and would urge you to pass it.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. I have a question to the left.
Senator Johnson.
One of the goals of this whole conversation about funding transit was to make sure that there was adequate expansion of service hours and service territory. And as TriMet is beginning to do the calculation on how do you accommodate low-income fares, all of that's going to cost money. And I would just like some assurance on the record that you all are still committed to the expansion of hours and service territory, because absent that, I don't think the bill has, the concept has the kind of integrity that we had anticipated that it would in the drafting originally.
Senator Johnson, we 100% agree.
On expansion of service and hours.
On expansion of service and hours.
Thank you.
You're on the record, remember, even though it's unofficial.
Madam Chair.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, my expectation would be if that doesn't show up in their plan, the OTC won't approve it.
Thank you.
Senator Monroe.
Well, I'd like to thank Senator Johnson for the question, because if the answer wasn't correct, I've been lying all over Southeast Portland.
You and everybody else. Any other comments? Thank you for being here. Mr. Penn, welcome.
Yes, hi. Dale Penn with Salem-Keizer Transit. First of all, I want to echo what Aaron said. Thank you very much for all the work you've done on House Bill 2017 last year. This really is transformative for all transit districts across the state, let alone just the one that I represent here in Salem. Just as a reminder, Salem Area Mass Transit District is the transit and paratransit fixed route service provider in the Salem-Keizer area. We also provide commuter service to the rural communities in Marion and Polk counties. The fix Aaron described, the operative fix around the date, I think will allow transit providers like Salem-Keizer Transit to begin looking at implementing programs like student bus passes earlier than they would have originally expected to do so. So I know my board is very interested in looking at those kind of those projects, those opportunities. Senator Monroe, you asked a really good question around how does this impact other districts around the state. I think Salem-Keizer is really excited about that conversation. I know that we are having a conversation with the community around transit bus passes for kids. That is something, if this operative change or operative fix, the date was to be altered, I think that's something that they'd be very excited about looking at. And also, to address the question from Senator Johnson, Salem-Keizer Transit is 100% committed to expanding service and hours. I think one of the biggest and most impactful service enhancements that we can do is weekend evening service in the Salem-Keizer area.
Excuse me.
That's something we're committed to. We're, again, having that conversation with the community, and we're excited about doing that. We do not foresee this operative fix impacting our ability to do that as well.
Senator Johnson.
One more question, and the three of you present a target of opportunity, because young Mr. Penn mentioned student bus passes, and I'm curious about TriMet. I don't know exactly what your policy is on student bus passes, and I think Mr. Penn just commented on your interest in expanding that program. Am I putting words in your mouth?
No, the Senator Johnson chairs. That is something that Salem-Keizer Transit is excited to have the opportunity to consider if this operative fix were to go into effect.
And TriMet?
We, Senator Johnson, we currently have an agreement with Portland Public Schools and the City of Portland. We share a third of their school bus, school pass project. We've extended that invitation to all the other school districts in our region, but they haven't taken advantage of it, partly because of spending money for limited passes for folks that maybe don't have, like kids that don't necessarily use it for school specifically. The service might not be good enough around the school. So we, in our early conversations in our advisory committee that we've put together already to start getting people educated on this subject, student passes has not been a major focus. Actually, it hasn't been a focus at all. Most of it's been on the low-income fare, on improved service, enhanced coverage, and electrification of our fleet. I know that Representative McEwen has some concepts that I think she's working on that would potentially aim that direction.
Thank you.
And I think that's a segue, and you may want to stay if you'd like to, propose an idea that I would like to bring forward. In the last long session and the session prior, a number of us sat around a table as a work group looking at issues around student transportation. I come from a rural school district. We have a small transit district. We lost activity buses many, many years ago. Our students have very few options. Portland Public Schools has taken advantage of the opportunity that they have and partnered with their school district and given students a great deal of flexibility by having a student transit pass. So a group of us brought forward a bill in the last session that would have created a fund at the Department of Education that would have offered an opportunity for school districts, which right now in language are precluded from using yellow bus money for student transit, to begin to breach that divide and bring student transportation into the 21st century. We had a very large work group that worked for about 18 months on this bill, and a number of you were actually in the audience today. And I want to thank you all for the work that you've done in trying to bring this bill forward. The bill had a momentum in the last session, and it kind of petered out at the end when we were trying very hard to move a very large transportation bill across the line. And that became less of an area of importance as we were trying to pass 2017. So the work group has maintained its integrity. We've come together this year with the same proposal, and we're trying to move that bill forward again. And what it does is create a pot, ask for general fund money for school districts to apply to begin to breach that gap. What I would like to suggest now is that in the spirit of student transportation, and I'm delighted it was brought up today, that we dedicate 1% of the it's not the STIF anymore, it has a new name, and I've forgotten what it is, but it's been renamed in the bill.
Steve Pissed.
It can't say it anymore.
It's unpronounceable.
And dedicate that to transit. Now, my original proposal was to just move the bill forward and dedicate 1% to the pot at the Department of Education, where school districts would apply for that money. They'd have to provide a 50-50 match, and then they could use that to buy student transit passes. And I think it's really critical to note that this is about student success. If you can get a kid off that high school campus to a community college to take classes, not only enhances their ability to get that diploma, but it saves them a whole bunch of money if they're going to go to college because they've already got credit that they didn't pay for. If they can get to a job, if they can get to a job shadow, if they can stay after school and be involved in enriching activities and use that transit pass to get home when they miss the yellow bus, because those activity buses don't run anymore. We've done a wonderful service to young people in giving them flexibility in student success. So that was the idea. I've been the last week or so working with a number of you who are involved with transit agencies, with the stakeholders that were at the table with the last student proposal, which is COSA, OSBA, OSEA, OEA, Portland Public Schools, the City of Portland, school districts large and small, the Department of Education, to see if there's a way that we could blend this. So there's a lot of conversations around that right now. Senator Beyer had some ideas tonight when I spoke with him. Senator Johnson's had some ideas. We've talked to everybody on the House side. Everybody's starting to weigh in on whether this is a viable option instead of 4130, which is the bill that's still moving through the system right now that happens to be in Representative McLean's committee right now, has had one hearing and has been well supported. Maybe there's a better way that we can do this. So it's a proposal that's out there. I have a dash 5 amendment. We actually took the language out of the original bill from last session and the proposal in 4130 in this session, proposing to move it into 4060 and see if we can do that lion's share of working, making sure that our students have options to drive their success rate up, teach them how to be good consumers, how to use transit. This is only grades 9 through 12, of course, but also bring those school districts and those transit entities across the state together in a partnership, which I think in the long run not only benefits the school district and the students that they represent, but can also make a robust system across the state as those conversations occur to make sure that those that everybody's at the table talking. So that's the idea. Senator Johnson.
When you called me this afternoon, I thought I understood it, and now I'm a little bit confused. Mm-hmm. I hear these guys saying that they, as transit providers, already do or want to provide student passes. And I'm just curious, your proposal subsidizes the big yellow school bus in the school district. I'm just confused.
Let me clarify, because it is very confusing. In the original bill, and the reason the original bill came is because we have school districts who can't use the money that the state provides, their 70-30 match, to purchase transit passes. We also have school districts who do not have access to transit. So to keep it fair and to make it equitable, when we originally crafted the request for funds, it was for activity buses for school districts who do not have access to transit, transit passes for the school districts who have access to transit passes, to provide opportunities for kids to have flexibility in transportation. I don't know about you all, but in the rural areas, activity buses went away many, many years ago and haven't come back. So students don't have options of staying after school and having activities, and enriching activities, and then being able to get home at night. So that was the idea when the bill was drafted in the first iteration about a year and a half ago, Senator. Now, with this proposal, it muddies that water a little bit, because the original ask was for a general fund ask to provide an opportunity for school districts to do both. Now that we have an employee tax that's paying for transit, I would like to propose a stream of money that's consistent over time that can provide a sustainable way for school districts to engage in transit. The original bill is still out there, and it's asking for a small amount of money that school districts who do not have an opportunity to have transit could still access for those activities buses that we don't have anymore. Yes, sir, Senator Beyer.
And I might say that when the representative brought this up, my suggestion was, why not earmark, if you will, she was saying 1% of the allocation that the providers got, and ask them to address how they're going to do or work with schools and school buses in their plan that they'd submit to the OTC to get money. That would be an easy way to make sure that every district had the same opportunity. The one concern that I think that the chair had with that one was, how do you get the school districts to play?
And that's hang a carrot. Yes, Senator Monroe. Senator Gerard.
I'm sorry. I appreciate where you're going, but the problem and concern that I have with going down the route for public or school kids using mass transit is safety. And, you know, the way it is now, if they get on a school bus, you're pretty well assured that, you know, it's a safe environment. Mass transit has not been what I would consider the most safe place for, and maybe I'm just talking the first three or four grades, but
limited to grades 9 through 12. This is just high school students.
Okay.
Yeah. Senator Monroe.
Yeah. Speaking, Mr. Deese talked about the fact that they're not right now doing a lot of negotiating with the East Portland school districts. And I understand that. We're talking Park Rose, David Douglas, Centennial in particular, maybe also some of North Clackamas. They all have their own bus fleets, and they provide pretty good service and even activity service. But with the new plan, we're going to be building sidewalks in the mid-county area. There's no sidewalks there now. And we're going to be doubling the amount of transit service available. And so the opportunity, I think, once this is implemented, the opportunity for negotiations between TriMet and the school districts to more efficiently serve and not have so much duplication, I think is going to be there. So It's not happening right now, and there's reasons for that. But, you know, 10 years from now, when we get those sidewalks built and double the amount of transit service in Mid-County, I think you'll see a change.
There's another issue, too, that I just don't want to lose sight of. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about TriMet and Lane County Transit. The larger transit districts, which are more engaged in this conversation already, part of the impetus for this is to create that. I mean, I have a transit district in my community. It's very small. I have two high schools. I have students who have an opportunity to go out to the community college and take classes, but they can't get there. So I would like that transit district to be communicating with those high schools to try and open those options for our kids. I mean, there are opportunities that we are missing with our young people. And I think including this in the conversation about how we expand services, how we extend services, I think it's, if we don't bring students into this conversation, I think we're missing a tremendous opportunity. So that's what this is about.
Okay.
Yeah, Representative McClain.
I think one of the other elements that's out there that's fairly new is the first mile, last mile coordination with TNCs. And so you've got some kids that, you know, may not be able or would not have been able to do it because of time elements. So it's putting all the tools together. This is just one of two or three tools that are out there that weren't available a year ago, 2 years ago. But I know that in our area, at least, first mile, last mile, there is it's a fare that, you know, can be combined, right? So, I mean, what I like about this particular program is something that Senator Monroe said, and that is it's not one thing by itself that can do it. It's the sidewalks, and it's the last mile, first mile TNC ride, and it's the easiness to actually have the fare, and it's fares for the students that can go to, you know, different hubs of education, you know, opportunities. It's not one thing. It wouldn't work. It couldn't have worked. But I think there are some opportunities. The other one is equity. When Caddy talks about the rural areas, there's a difference between Forest Grove, even though we've got the busiest bus in town, in our particular 57. One, number 57, that we still don't get it all the way to the end of Forest Grove. But with TNCs, there are more kids that could hop on a TriMet or get to a PCC, you know, campus in Hillsboro or whatever. So I do think that there are some opportunities out there, and that certainly everybody working together to try and plan those thoughts out would help. You know, and again, I think we're trying, in all honesty, to make sure that we're staying true to the spirit of 217, the actual bill we passed. And the spirit was that we were going to actually put some dollars in to different types of transit, or make sure that transit was used better and more. And some of you have already asked that question, Senator Johnson did, on making sure we're going to get farther. Well, we're not going to get farther just with the buses we've got, but we're going to get farther if we have the transit piece that works with TNCs and the transit piece that works with the schools and the low fares. So it's everything put together that actually makes a network.
I think we've exhausted this topic. Yeah. Thank you.
I have a question, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Boquist.
Good time to transition. I just have a technical
question.
We are
transitioning,
Patrick.
Yes.
Patrick, according to your stuff here, and it was raised by TriMet here, there was discussion of the language in terms may not be used for light rail, and your little note says this is in Section 21 of the bill, but I can't find it in Section 21.
It's probably a mistake, Madam Chair.
You
Senator.
Made a mistake.
I know. It's hard
Mr.
to
Brennan.
Imagine. So we'd be talking page 18 of House Bill 4060, Section 20, mm-hmm. Line 38 at the end. It says may not be used for light rail. Period.
I got it.
Yeah, that's
section
20.
You sent me I used your cheat sheet, yeah, and you sent right. me to the
Thank
wrong
you.
Place. Right?
I cheated
very
much.
All right, got it.
Julie Brown and okay. J.D. Torrey and Phil Donovan, please.
Okay.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Julie, thank you for driving clear up. It's a long way to Medford.
It's a short distance anymore. So
co-chairs and vice co-chairs, community members, thank you so much for allowing me to come and speak this evening. Before I get started, I'm Julie Brown. I'm the general manager of Rogue Valley Transportation District, but I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Transit Association. I want to thank you. I haven't seen you since last year, and if you had seen me the day that the bill passed, I was speechless. And it was because of all of your hard work that we were able to achieve this, and I can tell you that Oregonians across the state are welcoming the idea that they're now going to have transits available to them. Tonight I'm talking to you about Section 39 under Qualified Entity Reporting. This is a really small change or fix to the entity reporting. The reason we put this forward was it became apparent, I'm on the Rules of Committee for, well, it used to be the STIF, but to look at all of the aspects of the bill and the transit aspect in general. What we found was there were some dates that were in the bill.
Page 48 of the original bill.
Oh, sorry. That needed to be changed in order to for us to be compliant with what was being asked of us in accountability. So if you look at Section 39, the changes are very small. I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, some of us are confused. Are you speaking to 2017 or are you speaking to...
No, I'm speaking to 4060.
Oh, thank you.
I'm sorry.
Okay,
my
what
apologies.
Section are you in?
4060, Section 39.
What's at the tail end?
It's at the tail end. It's Qualified Entity Reporting.
No.
Negative on that.
Unit captions used.
Do I have the wrong?
Mine says captions.
Yeah, the unit captions used in this 2018
Act.
I
think we're talking 4059.
She's looking at a dash one.
Dash one, sorry.
Oh, okay. That's what it is. Yes. So there is a dash one amendment.
It's in the
members that are. That is on OLIS.
Which bill?
It's House Bill 460-1 that's up on OLIS. That's what the issue is.
Okay.
Ah, that's a big
so
issue.
So we'll have to see if we can get copies.
Can you please do that? Yeah, thank you. Can you hold one?
Mm-hmm. Sure. And I'm sorry if I confused you. I'm pretty confused myself.
Look it up on here.
It's easy to do.
There's a lot of things flying around.
You can probably go on, Madam Chair. We'll just take notes.
Please go ahead, yeah.
Okay.
We're taking notes.
So in the section, the original bill, it talked about reporting requirements and no later than 30 days prior to end of the fiscal year. What we found was a lot of the things that were being required to report on aren't even available to us until after the end of the fiscal year. So these are just some dates that, and I don't know if you want me to walk you through each one of them.
So Patrick can take some notes that, please.
Okay. So, under line 11, it says no later than 60 days after the end of the fiscal year, a report on actions taken by a public transportation service provider located within the area of a qualified entity to mitigate the impact of the tax posed under ORS 320-550 on passengers who reside in low-income communities. The next fix was no later than 30 days, this is line 16, after the adoption of the annual budget. The annual budget for the upcoming fiscal year would have to be sent in and provided to the Department of Transportation. And then on line 19, no later than 30 days after the final results of any audits of the qualified entity, public transportation service provider located within the area of qualified entity as required by law, state, or federal oversight agency for the purpose of statewide reporting. The final results, including but not limited to the state financial report required under ORS 291-040. The results of any comprehensive review completed by the Federal Transit Administration or the department, known as ODOT, and any information submitted by the qualified entity as part of the requirements of a statewide audit in accordance with federal single audit Act of 1984. So these were just some fixes to line the dates up with the requirements in state law.
So you're supportive of the language?
I'm supportive of the language.
In the amendment?
In the amendment.
Just the dates.
Just to be clear.
Yes.
Thank you. Everybody okay with that?
Yeah. That was easy. Thank you very much.
That was easy. Piece of cake. Welcome.
Good evening, chairs and committee. I'm J.D. Tovey, T-O-V as in Victor, E-Y. I am the planning director for the Umatilla Indian Reservation in Pendleton, Oregon, and I have Kayak Public Transit in my department. So obviously we just want to really thank you guys for all the work that you guys have done. I think this is going to have enormous impacts into rural transit and to connectivity for people in the communities we serve. Kayak Public Transit goes into four counties, Morrow, Umatilla, and Union County, and gets into Walla Walla County, and we connect 15 communities throughout northeastern Oregon. We also connect about to four other transit systems throughout the area, so we're kind of a lifeline to a lot of the areas in rural Oregon. So tribes are qualified entities and counties are qualified entities, and at least for us, a unique situation is we actually are two qualified entities that overlap each other. So there was a lot of talk. I'm also on the Rules Advisory Committee for the formerly STIF funds, and so there was a lot of excitement between us and Umatilla County of creating a joint committee. A joint committee can actually operate, reducing overhead, allowing more funds to go directly into transit and allocation into transit operations. There was a little bit of confusion, I think, in some of the language on whether or not we could actually create joint committees. And so there was a proposal that we're bringing up for a new section in 460. And let's see, in ORS 184-761, paragraph 1, the governing body of each qualified, and that's in section 2021 of House Bill 2017. The governing body of each qualified entity shall appoint an advisory committee or members to serve on a joint advisory committee. The operative language is or members to serve on a joint advisory committee, just to make sure that if there is a joint committee created, that each entity would name their members to that committee and not have to overlap everybody else and have to create two separate committees that just happen to meet jointly. If that's clear. And then the rest of it is just to advise and assist in prioritizing plans or projects to be funded from the monies received under the percentage distribution under ORS 184.758 to public transportation service providers that provide services within the jurisdictions of the qualified entity or qualified entities.
So it sounds like you need some clarification as these two organizations overlap. Not only how the distribution occurs, but how the right. committee is actually designed. Okay.
That's correct.
Madam. Senator Boquist.
So just to restate, what you're really trying to do is you have the two entities, and by combining services together on this language you have, you're going to reduce overhead, reduce administrative costs, and be more efficient.
Right.
Exactly what we're trying to do in this transportation plan.
Thank you.
And fostering interjurisdictional coordination.
Right.
Okay. Sounds good. Chair Beyer.
And actually, I was very impressed with your service when we were out on tour before, and it was actually, for me, it was a model of my thinking as we did this. To be very clear, what we've been impressing upon the department and the OTC is that there's only going to be one system in those areas, and the whole idea of what I've repeatedly said is there's an allocation. You don't get it unless you come together with a cooperative plan. And so what you're saying you want to do is right on target. That's the expectation that at least I had in the system.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Your questions?
Madam Co-Chair.
Welcome.
Phil Donovan on behalf of the Confederate Tribes of the Umatilla. And so just for your edification, he read that for the record. We have a note from Senator Hansel to get this drafted up to House Bill 4060. I'll just point out that we identified that this problem existed on January 29th. We've been back and forth with ODOT, Department of Justice, the Regional Advisory Committee, up until 2 p.m. this afternoon when Leo Horner got involved and got it fixed in an hour. So,
yay, Leah.
She's very nice.
Credit is due. The second thing this flag for the committee is that within the existing House Bill 4060, Section 34 clarifies that seatbelt regulations for travel transit service providers will be the same as Oregon's mass transit districts. So simply put, Section 34 that is in the existing House Bill 4060 just simply creates equity in regulation, and we'd appreciate that that be carried forward. And whatever is the final product, this committee should deem appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Donovan? All right, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
That exhausts our witness list for tonight. Is there anyone else who would like to address the committee?
You are.
Then we will move to let's see. I want to make a comment on the sections 18 and 19. The issue around parks and bike and pedestrian, there's some issues there that we need to discuss, and we've agreed that we will do those during the interim. We're happy to put a pin in that, get together with everybody during the interim, and take a look at how that plays itself out. So I just wanted to make note of that. We've talked about the statewide transportation, whatever the new name is now, which I don't have written down. So we're going to move on to bicycle excise tax. And I believe we have someone from the... Let Patrick start off.
To be clear, yes. The things we just talked about, are the committee members in sort of the consensus mode, are those okay, or do we have an objection?
I would like clarity about the proposals. What are we talking about?
This would be the proposal that Ms. Brown made, which were the clarifications on the dates, and from the gentleman from Umatilla, Mr. Donovan, the issues around clarifying how they put together their joint committee. I think, and they're already working on the amendment for that.
And the prior ones,
which were
TriMet.
The light rail issue, and what else did we have, Patrick?
Language to allow them to take the risk and spend the money.
The reimbursement for being the early adopter of the transit plan before the revenue actually is available. The reimbursement of ODOT.
Before I give a thumbs up on that, I'd like to hear from ODOT. I just want to make sure that this is copacetic. We got two parties to make a contract, and I'd like to hear from the second party.
Yeah, I was hoping.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Matthew Garrett, Director of ODOT. We have no concerns with the direction, the language, the shifting of the operational time frames. Understanding, do it eyes wide open. Mm-hmm. There are some issues with regard to cash flow, how fast it comes in, the compliance rates. Those will be worked out. But everything Mr. Dees and the good folks from TriMet indicated, we're fine. We can work the deal.
And the other issues?
Everything I understand is we're comfortable.
So just to recap, that's the dates, that's the Umatilla
board.
Multi-jurisdictional, it's the light rail, and it's the reimbursement for early enactment.
We're comfortable with all that. We'll work those issues.
If they get accepted.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think
thank you,
Madam Chair.
Thank you. You want to explain the issue around the excise tax base?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there are two issues that are not in House Bill 4060 because they were being... refined and discussed by staff to make a recommendation for how to deal with a couple issues around the bicycles. The first issue was related to electric bicycles, which according to House Bill 2017 fall under the vehicle privilege tax. The problem is, of course, is that the people who sell electric bicycles are not subject to paying the vehicle privilege tax. That's licensed or certified automobile vehicle dealers in the state, whereas electric bicycles are generally sold by bike shops. So there was some discussion about how to address that, and the simple solution that staff has recommended is to simply make the electric bicycles subject to the bicycle excise tax as opposed to the vehicle privilege tax. So that's the solution that's being presented for that as the first of the two issues. The second issue was there was a lot of discussion around the definition of taxable bicycle. Specifically, bicycles are defined in House Bill 2017 as having two wheels that are over 24 inches in diameter, which was designed primarily to exclude children's bicycles. However, bicycles come in all sorts of shapes and sizes, and not the least of which is there's not really a definition of vehicle wheel size that is in inches. They're all in metric for whatever reason. So that was problematic to refer to it in inches, which started the conversation. But of course, there's other issues related to wheel size and definitions, not the least of which is some bicycles have one big wheel, one small wheel, and it says two wheels over a certain size. So there was a lot of discussion about how you could redefine bicycles to make that all work, and the solution which was put forward that seems to be the simple solution is simply remove all references to wheel size entirely and just say that the excise tax applies to bicycles over $200, period. And so any bicycle over $200, the bicycle excise tax would apply to, regardless of wheel size, regardless of whether it's an e-bike. And so that's the solution that's been put forward for discussion by the committee.
Senator, for those of us that haven't bought a kid's bicycle in about 600 years, I have no idea what the going price tag on a kid's bike is.
Walmart, less than $100.
Okay, thank you. That's what I needed to know.
I was going to say.
Senator.
In the committee, we actually looked at that and came up with, there's a whole bunch of bikes, frankly, both adult and kids, that you can buy for under $200. $200 seems to be a benchmark of more expensive bikes, although you certainly can buy them that are a whole lot more expensive than that.
Indeed.
Representative Vile.
Patrick, what ended up coming out of the conversation around the difference between a motorcycle and an e-bike that is getting up there in horsepower and all that sort of thing? Did we ever figure that out?
Well, it's my understanding that electric assist bicycles do not meet the engine size or horsepower that is the definition of motorcycle in statute. I don't know if it's I don't even think it reaches motor scooter levels. I'm probably talking a little bit over my skis if we're going to get too close to the definition of where a motorcycle begins and an electric assist bicycle stops. But that's my understanding is that that's.
I'm remembering that motorcycle I had as a kid that actually had pedals on it, but could go.
Called a moped.
50 miles an hour. Yeah, it was called a moped.
Colloquially called a moped.
It's not legal anymore, is it?
It's in the garage.
Well, I mean, if there was somebody in the audience who knew exactly where these lines draw. I see Department of Revenue standing up.
Somebody knows.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I thought you were supposed to be able to punt this to DOR, and they were going to sink the ship.
Welcome.
And members of the committee, for the record, my name is Exan Culver with the Oregon Department of Revenue. And at the risk of stepping on ODOT's toes, there is a statutory definition of electric assist bicycle. I do not believe that there would be any crossover to the definition of motorcycle because the the motor vehicles law clearly states that electric assisted bicycles are not subject to licensing and registration requirements like motorcycles are.
Cool. So did we fix the problem from your perspective? I know the revenue had some questions about how to define it. I'm thinking not just the electric,
you're
but the sizes.
You're thinking about the bicycle and the wheel size.
The bicycle wheel size, for our administration purposes, limited to just the dollar amount would be much more clear for the bicycle retailers as to which bicycles are subject to the tax.
Cool.
Yes, sounds good.
Works for me.
Questions for the
$199.
Expert in the room.
Thank you.
It's fine. Cool.
I think you're done. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was helpful.
So I think that's one issue we agreed we can check the box on that.
Okay.
Seems like everybody's okay with that?
Yeah. Everybody good? Cool.
I have a question.
I believe that exhausts the list of topics that we had on the agenda.
Oh, yes.
Well, my question, McLean.
I mean, I have no problem with the bikes that we just talked about or the clarity there. But right now, all we're doing is giving a thumbs up so it can be written. We're not voting on each of these amendments at this point.
Can't vote on it.
Because I don't think a thumbs up is a real good way to do
it. Correct. The drafters will go draft, and we will have an amendment for you.
Madam Chair, if I may add.
Senator Beyer.
But if you have a major problem, because we don't have a lot of time to redraft.
Speak now.
And you're probably going to see it. You're probably going to see it in an amendment.
And once again, the goal is to have the bill come out of this committee on the 26th. So
2 weeks from today.
2 weeks from today. Patrick, do you want to once again just for Wednesday, what people can expect?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So for Wednesday, we'll be moving the discussion on EV rebates and privilege tax to Monday, the 19th. So Wednesday will then become Pacific Wonderland plate, outdoor advertising signs. I think we touched on Section 34, which was the CTYR's seatbelt. I think Mr. Donovan talked about that. Mm-hmm. So that was the third issue that was hanging out there. But we've talked about that tonight. And then aggregate, Madam Chair.
Anything for the good of the order?
Is it ominous?
Actually, I need to.
Point for the good of the order. Since we agree with the with Umatilla on two counts, they then said they had a mother may I for Senator Hansel. Do they need to execute their mother may I for Senator Hansel, or do we need to? We just have to do it because we were all conceptually.
If I can, Madam Chair, Senator,
please.
If it's being drafted and the drafters and council that are working on that. We could literally just take the amendment as it comes there and utilize the amendment that Senator Hansen is generating rather than having him issue an identical amendment twice.
I don't know. I mean, Mother May I and generating, here, is it actually submitted, is my point.
I believe so. I'll check with her office.
Yeah, why don't we do it the most efficient with Legislative Council?
Yeah, I'll check with Senator Hansen.
Representative Beyer. All right, Representative Vial.
I want to try one more time on this aggregate question. What's the general nature of the discussion that we're likely to hear?
You want me to give it to
you? Senator Beyer, you've been in the conversation more than I have.
I think this is one day.
I don't know. You gave it to me.
Yeah, so. I know.
They're digging.
Okay.
You want to give people copies of that? That was the.
We can distribute it.
Can't build anything.
We don't have a way to scan it.
Tell you what it says.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
The easiest way is I will just. This is from COSA. Not COSA.
OCAPA.
Yeah.
It's acronyms. And I'm just going to read it, and it modifies. It has to do with that aggregate section that ODOT raised the question on. And I think it's an ad, and it modifies ORS. 215-296, and it says a demonstration by an applicant that a proposed use listed in ORS sections, I'm not going to read those, comply.
I can read it, Mr.
It's in 14 font.
Go ahead.
All right, so I'll read it. So, a demonstration by an applicant that a proposed use listed in ORS 215-213 sub 2 sub D or 215-283 sub 2 sub B. Complies or is reasonably likely to comply with an applicable federal, state, or local air, noise, water quality, or other environmental standards shall constitute compliance with ORS 215-296 sub 1 as to impacts regulated by the applicable standard. The applicant may demonstrate compliance with an applicable federal, state, or local standard in order to meet ORS 215-296 sub 1 through imposition of a condition.
It's a land use citing issue.
Any condition so implied shall be clear and objective.
Could you send that out to us, please?
Yes.
Thank you. So he will send that
out
to us.
Okay, good.
So you can take a look at it before Wednesday.
Right. Has to do with the issue when we were talking about the construction, the issue of availability of rock for projects and the effect on cost.
and where those are sited, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Not trucking rock 150 miles.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I will close the hearing on 4060. And unless there's anything else for the good of the order, we're adjourned. Thank you all.